Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Scaloni has made a run down that right side. Will sink too by Ashton Harewood. Wants it in the middle. Oh, it's an own goal!
A video revolution is taking place on the internet, and the entertainment industry is having to change radically to keep up. The website YouTube is one of a number of new sites where millions of people are publishing and sharing their own movies.
Hetherington teasing Herpia. Oh, testing Rayner, who lost it and it's in!
YouTube was only created last year, but already 20 million people a month are visiting. And every day, 65,000 new videos are uploaded here.
A lovely ball as well for Cissé! It's there this time.
Hello everybody and welcome to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller and joining Jonathan Wilson and myself is Jacob Steinberg, football reporter for The Guardian. Jacob, lovely to have you here.
Lovely to be here.
We go back to the 2006 FA Cup final between West Ham and Liverpool. Liverpool won 3-1 on penalties after a brilliant game that ended 3-3. Why have you chosen this game, Jacob?
I think it's one of the best games I've ever been at, and it was also probably, at the time, probably the best FA Cup final there'd been for years. I think, thinking back, the year before that was Arsenal v Manchester United that finished 0-0 on penalties. Year before, United v Millwall, not much happened there. Mm. And there was the first game at Wembley as well, the following year after the West Ham game, which was that big build-up between Chelsea and United and then turned out to be one of the worst games that had ever taken place. Last minute drop a winner in extra time, I think. It was probably at the time, I think everybody saw it as this amazing cup final with the underdogs really almost causing that huge surprise until Steven Gerrard, who at the time was, you know, England's best player and everything, and the year after Istanbul turned up and broke their hearts.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, when you look back at those results, Jonathan, at that time, there was some really kind of boring, quite frankly, FA Cup finals, but that one really stands out.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think which of the first FA Cup final I covered was, and I think it would have been that United Millwall game in 2004.
3-0 Manchester United.
It was 3-0. Ronaldo had a brilliant game.
A number of comfortable goals to nil. you're right. I mean, I think best FA Cup final since 89, 87 maybe?
Something like that. But the 90s, it's hard to pick out a particularly... Yeah. There were a lot of comfortable wins.
I suppose the 3-3 Palace United was good in 1990.
Yeah.
So maybe the best since then.
But there'd been these big build-ups actually to a lot of big games. So you could go to 96 and United v Liverpool, which turned out to be an absolutely
terrible
awful game.
Yeah.
You know, when United played... when they played Newcastle, they just won that comfortably. Arsenal beat them comfortably. Chelsea Villa, the last game at Wembley, that 1-0.
Dreadful
was awful.
Game, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were a lot of poor cup finals, and I think it had sort of become a bit of a damp squib until that game. I think maybe the one you could pick out was Arsenal v Liverpool when Owen scored late on, but mostly it was pretty poor games.
The Chelsea-Arsenal final as well was decent.
Yeah, it's only Ray Parlour.
Yeah.
But mostly they were...
But it's decent, not a great game, whereas this game is you know, a hugely memorable, thrilling game. Well, I have to say, I'd sort of forgotten just how absurd the equaliser is.
There's a lot that goes
You're jumping ahead here.
Yeah, I'm jumping ahead.
And understandably so, because what a goal it was. But yeah, I mean, it was, as you say, Jacob, West Ham very much the underdogs going into this game. They'd finished ninth in the Premier League under the strong and steady leadership of Alan Pardew. But it wasn't a bad side. Ninth place finish, of course.
Yeah, they had it was a decent side. They'd actually, it was Pardew's... It was actually only his second full season in charge. He'd come in 2003, replacing Glenn Roeder, who'd been sacked after... Glenn Roeder had taken them down in the end of the 2002-03 season, and he had a little bit of time at the start of the 2003-04 season. Didn't go very well. They lost at Rotherham and Roeder got sacked, and then they had to wait for Pardew to turn up. So Trevor Brooking had taken caretaker charge for the second time because he was actually in charge when they went down because Roeder had his ill health when they went down. And so they had to put Pardew was on gardening leave for a while before they could actually get him away from Reading. And he'd taken them up in 2004-05. And he spent that entire season, 2004-05, being close to being sacked because they were looked for a long time like they weren't going to get into the playoffs. He'd lost the playoff final the year before. So this game against Liverpool was their third visit in as many years to Cardiff, the Millennium Stadium, because they had the game against Crystal Palace in 04 where they just didn't turn up. They lost 1-0. Neil Shipley scored the winner from a yard out.
That's right.
Sort of just bundled it in. It sort of hit him and went in, and they just didn't turn up that day and Palace went up instead. They played Preston a year later and kind of the club's future was on the line with this. He'd hit upon this young side towards the end of that 2004-05 season, Pardew, where they suddenly clicked. They got into the playoffs on the last day. I think at the expense of Wigan, I think it was, and they Bobby Zamora hit, who'd been a bit of a, he hadn't done too much for West Ham before after joining them. He hit this form in the playoffs and got them up, scored the winner against Preston, and they had this young team when they came up. They added a little bit of experience to it. They brought in Danny Gabbadon and James Collins, who were actually quite young at the time, the pair of them from Cardiff. Gabbadon ended up playing alongside Anton Ferdinand at centre back.
Ferdinand had a good season.
In a very good season. He was very good for a while.
Nominated for PFA Young Player of the Year.
He scored an amazing goal against Fulham.
Remember
that? The volley out of nowhere.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I think he ran off to the camera shouting something like, "I'm Anton, I'm not Rio," something like that. but there was all this talk about him potentially playing for England.
That's right,
Rio Ferdinand's little brother at the time, and he come into the league, and he did, you know, they had a similar playing style in a way, but obviously it was a slight gulf between the pair of them. But he was a good player for a while, and it was a shame how his career actually did kind of trail off towards the end of it. And they brought in Paul Konchesky from Charlton, who had a very good first season, and Yossi Benayoun from I think he was playing for Rayo Vallecano at the time. They bought him for very little, something like $2.5 million, $3.5 million, and then they had Teddy Sheringham up front from the previous season as well. He was just that little bit of a little bit of experience. But, you know, there were people like Marlon Harewood, Nigel Riococca.
Riococca was captain, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was the captain.
22-year-old and captain. And I remember speaking to him before the final and sort of being very impressed by just sort of how authoritative and how mature he was. And he's sort of one of those players, what went wrong?
I think
the fans really got on his back.
Not that season. He had a brilliant game in the cup final. He did have a good season. His passing wasn't the best. And I wonder if he believed his own hype a little bit and thought he was a little bit better than he actually was. And there was all this talk after that game, the following transfer window that summer, that Arsenal and United wanted him. And I think he kind of lost his way a little bit, lost his focus. And we're getting on way past the final, but there was a game against, the fans did get on his back a little bit, and there was a game against just after Pardew had been sacked in December 2006, and Kerbishley had taken over I think Kirbishley's first game was against Manchester United at home, and this was a resurgent United who won the league that season. And Rio Coca scored the winner in that game, and he ran towards the Bobby Moore lower at the old Upton Park with his cupping his ear towards the West Ham fans. And that was just the end for him, basically. He never won it back after that, and he was sold at the end of that season to Aston Villa. And again, it kind of went wrong for him there after a few years.
Yeah. Well, what about Liverpool going into this final, Jonathan, under Benitez, of course? I mean, European champions?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a strange way to start a season when you'd finished fifth in the Premier League and yet you're the European champions. And I guess that must be quite hard mentally to get over. But, you know, Liverpool, although they were never in the title race, you know, Chelsea ran away with it again. They finished third. You know, they finished the season with nine straight wins. You look at the team, it's a pretty good team. You know, the
Alonso and Gerrard in there.
Yeah, well, Alonso alongside Sissoko in the centre midfield. Mm-hmm. Hippier and Carragher together at the back. Gerrard playing on the right. Harry Kewell, who, as ever in a major final, didn't make it.
He got injured
through, just after half time. Yeah.
Pepe Reina in goal.
Yeah, so I guess he'd replace Dudek.
Yeah, Dudek was on the bench, yeah.
From the Champions League final. And you know, then Cisse and Crouch up front, which I guess that's what you look at and think, actually, they weren't that great this side.
But Crouch went for that, because obviously he'd signed from Southampton, who'd gone down.
And he had that long spell without scoring. Then he scored a penalty, did he? Or did he miss a penalty?
He missed a penalty. And I think someone else followed up the rebound and scored it. But he scored his first goal against Wigan. It took him ages to score. But the first goal, I think, went down as an own goal. Ah. I think it was a huge deflection. He went on this run and shot from... Peter Crouch generally doesn't shoot from 30 yards out, but he did. It looked like it would have been the kind of thing that would have rolled into the goalkeeper's arms. It hit somebody and went in, and then a little bit after that, I think he scored again in that game. And afterwards they were taking it off him, and he was sort of good humoured about it. And there's an interview with him where he's sort of moaning about the goal was being taken off him and everything. He said, "You're not going to take that one off me as well." And, but he took a while to get going, didn't he? But I think they liked him because he tried so hard.
Well,
period, and then eventually he got going. And
yeah, well, I guess goals were not necessarily the main part of his game. You know, he offered quite a lot more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some forwards, if they're not scoring, we're not offering anything. Well, Crouch is absolutely not that.
Well, then, of course, he started up front for England in the summer, shortly after the final, of course. Let's start talking about the match then, shall we? I mean, it was a warm, sunny day in Cardiff, as you say. Wembley was still being rebuilt. I remember those years.
Yeah, I mean, looking back at the highlights, the aesthetic of it is... I'd sort of forgotten that Cardiff could look like a cup final.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, but it has that proper cup final aesthetic of the pitch is perfect, it's a bright sunny day. This is going to sound odd, but I think one of the problems of a new Wembley is the crowd is too close for goals. Now, I think that's great for league football, but I think the cup final, there's something nice about the old Wembley, that the crowd was a long way back, as if this thing that was happening was so sacred and so holy... You couldn't let the public too close to it. And this here, I mean, Cardiff obviously is the Millennium Stadium, the goals weren't quite as far, weren't anywhere near as far.
There's a little bit more distance.
But there's more of a gap than there is at the modern Wembley.
Yeah, I think you were letting tradition or maybe familiarity get in the way.
Yeah, perhaps. But I had forgotten that Cardiff could look that good for a cup final. I sort of in my head, it didn't feel quite right.
Sure. I mean, Jacob, going into the game, did you think West Ham had a chance?
I think they'd beaten Spurs the week before to stop Spurs getting into the Champions League, the famous Lasagna Gate.
Absolutely.
When Arsenal got in instead when Henri scored that hat trick on the final day at Highbury. So they were able to play some of the top sides and really take them on. They actually won at Highbury earlier in the season. They were the last away team to do that. So they had this fearless way of playing, and they actually would concede the first goal a lot that season, and they had a brilliant, well, to quote Ian Dowie, they had the bounce back ability at the time, which was the phrase of the time when he coined that. But they were able to just come back in a lot of games, and that quality actually eluded them the following season, which is one of the reasons they started to struggle. But they had an amazing spirit, a big togetherness in that side, and that you could see ways in which they could hurt them, because one of the things they'd done in January, which would have made them a better side, was buying Dean Ashton for $7.5 million. I think he was the record signing for West Ham at the time, from Norwich, and he was in the Championship at the time, but he had a good little spell with Norwich in the Premier League before they got relegated. And he was, when he came in, challenging Harewood, Zamora, Sheringham for to play up front. He was the first choice striker, and he was fantastic, and he was fantastic on the day. And he had a brilliant, certainly first half, and really gave Hippier and Carragher lots of trouble. Probably one of the toughest games either of them would have had as a pairing. And that was a way that West Ham had to get them. They were an attacking side. They were good on the counter attack. Had a lot of pace. Benny Hume with the creativity. They were a settled back four, but you could see ways in which they could win. And Liverpool weren't a special side. They had Gerrard, which was where the worry came. And obviously, Benitez was a top manager. They played each other twice that season, obviously, in the league. Liverpool had won very comfortably at Anfield. I remember being in that, and they were very difficult to get at, that team. Mm-hmm. It was so good defensively. And then they went to Upton Park a few weeks before the cup final. And late on, Luis Garcia and Hayden Mullins had a scrap, and they both got sent off, and it got both players suspended from the final.
Yeah, I remember looking through the team and thinking Luis Garcia wasn't there.
So Luis Garcia wasn't there. Hayden Mullins, so he was a very important player for Liverpool. He was one of the. It was a quite functional side that they had at the time, but he was one of the big creative players, and he was a big goal scoring threat. Whereas probably people like Alonso and Sissoko weren't so much, and Kuhl was. Well, Harry Kuehl had a Harry Kuehl final and limped out of it after 15 minutes, but he also was about to leave Liverpool, wasn't he, at that time? He'd sort of gone off the boil after not really doing that much for them, having been... I remember there was a lot of excitement when he joined. Mm. So him not being there was a big thing. Conversely, Hayden Mullins not being there for West Ham was a big blow, because he was a really important player alongside Rio Coca, which ended up with Carl Fletcher dropping in instead alongside... Okay.
All right, well, let's get into the finer details of the game after a quick break.
Now Konchesky lending his support down the left. Oh, it's in! Paul Konchesky has conjured up an incredible goal.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
That's Risa, tossed it towards Morientes, and then Gerrard! Oh! Oh, goodness me! What a strike from Steve Gerrard! I told you, don't write them off!
Now then, gentlemen, let's get down to the 90 minutes. Shall we begin with the Carragher own goal, or was there anything before that you wanted to...
It was a very slow start. Not much happened, with a lot of Liverpool pressure and West Ham playing on the break. And I remember thinking, this isn't going well.
Yeah.
And then it was Ashton who got involved after 10, 15 minutes. Great part. Because Ashton was... I always likened him to being a little bit like a cross between Shearer and Sheringham. Mm-hmm. So he had the ability to go up against a centre-back, hold the ball up. He had a bit of pace to him, even though he was quite a big lad. He could shoot, he could score any type of goal, which was a bit like the Shearer, but he was also very good at, he was very clever.
Mm-hmm.
He was good at dropping off and quite skillful. So he dropped off and plays this pass in behind whoever was playing left back for Liverpool that day, and in comes Lionel Scaloni.
Argentinian manager, Scaloni.
Blimey.
And he was, because he'd been on West Ham midway through that season, had lost Thomas Repka. Do you remember the red card machine?
Absolutely.
And they'd had to sign an emergency right back, and Scaloni had been pretty poor, but he got in the final instead of James Collins. Anton Ferdinand had been playing right back for a lot of the... He played right back in the semi-final against Middlesbrough, and Collins had played alongside Gabadon, and then... They shifted it around, and Scaloni puts in the cross, and Carragher scored a lot of own goals, didn't he?
And he got one there.
You know when Mike Atherton was at Cambridge University and his nickname was FEC, F-E-C, future England captain?
Oh, I didn't know.
Was Scaloni's nickname FAM, future Argentina manager?
No. What are you doing? Get him off, I think was his nickname.
I mean, he got an assist in an FA Cup final, of course. Yeah. But that Jamie Carragher own goal put West Ham 1-0 up after about 21 minutes. It really is poor defending. I mean, the ball is kind of sort of fizzed in.
Poor defending that Ashton's not picked up. So Ben Ayoun plays the pass into Ashton. Ashton's sort of come eight yards,
mm-hmm.
and neither centre-back's followed him. And you sort of... You look at the two teams, and they're very clearly both 4-4-2s, and that's where Ashton's ability to drop off is so vital. And obviously, Ben Ayoun buzzes around a bit, but Etherington very much stays out wide and maintains the shape in that 4-4-2. But Liverpool are actually pretty similar. It's a 4-4-2. Crouch and Cissé aren't really moving from that position. And okay, you've got Gerrard and Kewell who do come in, and Gerrard, particularly late in the game, sort of ends up playing central midfield effectively. But you really see the blockishness of the 4-4-2s when Ashton drops deep and there's just nobody moves towards him. Mm. So it's poor defending from that point of view.
Yeah.
And then, as the ball comes across, I mean, you can argue Risa maybe should be more aware of Scaloni making the break outside him.
But still, though, when the ball comes in from Etherington, it's like Carragher goes to back heel it away.
Scaloni.
Carragher goes to back heel it away. So the ball's coming in, and it's kind of like behind him.
He sort of trips it into the net.
I think if you watch the way his leg moves, he is trying to back heel away across, hit with a bit of pace coming in across the 6-yard box.
Do you think he's just so slightly overrun it? He hasn't realised that the cross has been cut back?
I don't know. I think if you look at it again, I think he's trying to sort of like almost like back heel away in the slight confusion when actually he could easily knock it out for a corner.
He's not really under pressure, is he?
He's under no pressure at all.
Because Rayner is coming out to get the cross.
He can leave it. He can do all sorts of things. But
Harewood's not sort of breathing down his neck. Harewood's sort of two, 3 yards away.
So. It really was a gift to West Ham.
Yeah, well, the second goal is a gift as well.
Which comes seven minutes later.
Yeah. So without really doing too much, just the way that they played in that kind of fearlessness and attacking and everything, I think it's Ashton again is involved, knocking it down for Etherington, who has just this very weak shot. That Pepe Reina, who I never really particularly rated, I thought there was always a mistake in him, spills in front of Ashton, who just sort of trickles it into the net. And suddenly, out of nowhere, 25 minutes in, West Ham are 2-0 up in their first FA Cup final for 26 years against the European champions at the time. And they're pinching themselves and they can't believe it.
Well, I couldn't believe it watching as well. I thought, bloody hell, this is on sort of thing.
Yeah, well, it very much felt like it was. And
was there a feeling, because obviously 4 minutes later, obviously Liverpool... get one back. But
well, Liverpool had a goal disallowed as well before getting it back. Crouch had a goal disallowed.
They took that one off him as well.
Yeah, they took that. Crouch, in very much a similar way. I think it's Gerrard who's involved with long ball over the top or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And not picked up. And I think he was onside, Crouch, and it's flagged offside. And, you know, Liverpool just stepped up a little bit straight away. Gerrard's involved up in the inside right channel and just that long ball. Driven over, laces it over the West Ham defence, and a really good finish from from Cisse.
Blackpool travels a very long way. Is it, you know, it's 50-yard pass, 60-yard pass from Gerrard?
Yeah,
he's from a very deep position. So yeah, when you see the ball move that far, you always wonder, could the defence have done more to...
Yeah, I think it drops over Anton's head.
Yeah, it would have been.
But at the same time, it was an amazing finish.
Yeah,
from him.
I mean, he just hits it first time in the volley.
Yeah, and he's falling over as well when he does it.
Yeah, it's not lash. He sort of controls thing, in the bottom corner.
But Cisse, he didn't particularly have a good time at Liverpool, did he? He broke his leg very early on, yeah. And then he came back and...
Well, he was always a funny old player, though. I mean, I saw him a lot at Sunderland as well. And on his day, he was like the best player you've ever seen, but his day didn't come around that often.
Yeah.
And he was somebody who was never shy of trying something ludicrous. If a ball dropped him on the volley 40 yards out, oh, he'd have a pop, why not?
Yeah.
One in 50 goes in or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you think, oh, what an amazing player. But
I mean, that goal in the cup final, you're saying that from Liverpool's point of view, it's a great goal.
Yeah, but I don't think he got on remotely with Benitez either. I think he got him
not
out.
Not
think
Benitez type of player at all, no, was he?
And he got him out at the... I think because he'd already been signed, hadn't he, by the time Benitez turned up. I think he arrived in the same summer as Benitez, but I think
Julier's
parting gift for Benitez. Here you go, have this.
Like leaving some raw prawn behind the radio show.
But when West Ham went 2-0, like, what was the feeling in the West Ham? And was it
just
kind of like...
disbelief.
Can't believe it, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Was there panic
much
of...
happened after... Well, I think after they got back to 2-1, it was, oh, well, that's it. They're going to win this now.
Really?
And but then, you know, they held on for the rest of the half, and it was kind of just Ashton bullying the Liverpool defence and he nearly scores a brilliant goal where he shakes off one of his markers and turns and just lashes this low shot just wide from 20 yards. And it's quite, if you look back at that performance, it's just quite sad. He didn't make the World Cup. Ashton was, I think he was 22 at the time. He doesn't, it's the 2006, so he doesn't make the World Cup squad at that time. Half fit Owen, half fit Rooney, Crouch and Defoe go instead of, and did Defoe even go? But Theo Walcott goes instead. 17-year-old Theo Walcott has never played a England game.
Yeah, I don't Ashton think Defoe didn't. Was left back. Yeah, he didn't go. Yeah,
Ashton was left back, and then eventually Sven goes. Steve McLaren comes in and he puts Ashton in his first squad. And, you know, you're thinking, and this is August 2006, and in that first training session he's in, Sean Wright Phillips breaks his ankle, and his career, I mean,
of all
was,
people, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
the ferocious Sean Wright Phillips,
yeah. And he misses the whole of that following season, which completely messes West Ham up because he was their best player, and he comes back and it's just not right. He has various little comebacks, little injuries, and everything. And he retired in 2009. He was 26 when he retired. He would have been.
It's such a shame, yeah. Dean Ashton. Yeah, I think people can forget what a player he was and what a player he would have been as well.
I was. Telling you guys before that I was with James Collins the other night doing a podcast with him, and we were talking about him, and he said he was the best striker he ever played with.
Yeah.
Impossible to play against in training, and he played with some good ones, James Collins. I mean, not some brilliant ones all the time.
Hal Robson-Carney.
Yeah, he played with Hal Robson-Carney, but you know, he played with Teddy, played with Tevez,
mm-hmm.
And you know, he rated him higher than Andy Carroll, who obviously very difficult to play against and everything. And
Even Zamora. I mean, Zamora at West Ham wasn't great, but I saw him a lot at Fulham, and he perhaps was, maybe took inspiration from Ashton, because his game was not in terms of the goals, but that kind of hold up, you know, sort of try and bully centre halves when he was at his best at Fulham, which may have only been a season or two.
Well, we did the greatest game with Philippe Auclair about Fulham beating Juve 4-1, and Zamora was brilliant in that game.
Yeah, he was fantastic. But yeah, great shame for
Ashton. I mean, Ashton scores. He had little injuries on and off for West Ham during that little run where he joins in January, but he played against, they played the quarter final against City away on a Monday night, and nothing really happened in the game for about 40 minutes. And then Ashton just gets throw and 1-2 with, I think, Benny Yoon, and suddenly out of nowhere, just produces this amazing turn to get away from, I think it was Distan, who was a good defender at the time for City, and sort of puts it onto his left foot and just smacks this shot that was so hard that it beats David James at the near post. And it was just, after that, he scored again. And he was just at his best. That was what he was capable of doing. There's that goal against United, the overhead kick, but it's just sort of, that was Dean Ashton in capturing his career in one moment. He scores this amazing bicycle kick at Old Trafford 4-1 win for United at the time in 2008. And doing so, he injures himself and goes off at half-time because of the way he landed while scoring at the Stretford end. And that was the story of his career, really. But he would have played for England, and he would have probably scored quite a few goals for them. And I don't think he would have spent his entire career at West Ham if that injury hadn't happened.
Yeah. Well, into the second half, Liverpool start coming back. And on 54 minutes, Mr. Gerrard smashes home the equaliser. And it was a real... when Gerrard smashed that in, there was an air of, right, here we go, lads. Come on, we're better than this lot. Now the cup final's ours. Enough of that nonsense about going 2-0 down. Here we go. And I'd imagine among the West Ham fans, when you see Gerrard produce a moment like that...
Well, it's a lovely goal, isn't it? Alonso's ball in, Crouch knocks it down, and Gerrard, I mean, from a defensive point of view, he's got far too much space.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's in just inside the box, but he's somehow in 6 yards of space.
They're very inexperienced, though, that West Ham team, and it's Gerrard.
But the ball drops to him, and as it gets to the top of the bounce, he absolutely leathers it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it pretty much was, well, that was nice.
Yeah, yeah. It was great while it lasted.
Yeah.
A bit like, I remember talking to a couple of Palace fans when Pardew again was in charge at Wembley, not that long ago, Louis van Gaal's Manchester United.
And the Pardew dance.
And the Pardew dance. And when they went 1-0 up, and that was only for about a minute and a half or something. And I remember some of the Palace fans going, oh, that minute and a half was bliss. You know, that sort of moment where you think, bloody hell, we're on for a cup final win here.
When it was Sunderland v City in the League Cup final in 2014.
Yeah, I was there.
At least we had half time.
Yeah, that's right. But
then 3 minutes after half time, Yaya Touré scores a preposterous goal. Oh, okay, never mind.
But I mean, that goal was incredible, and that was just Gerrard at the time.
Yeah.
That's what he was so good at, just running onto a bouncing ball and hitting it cleanly and on target. And
Because he's made a goal with a brilliant assist. And to be honest, Liverpool didn't play well the entire game.
No.
And it was just Gerrard played well in moments. And it was the year after the final against Milan, where he's done not exactly the same thing, but basically had got them back into the game on his own after half time.
Well, and that's the great irony of Benitez's greatest successes at Liverpool, is they both came, it's like they had to go behind, so if 3-0 down in Istanbul, 2-0 down in this game, and that he then has to sort of release the handbrake. The handbrake was how he managed. He hated anything that was random, any kind of aspect of luck.
Yeah.
He hated. He wanted to take that out of the game, and then bizarrely he'll be remembered for two great comebacks led by the most anarchic player in his side, Gerrard, because he's had to release the handbrake and say, just go on then.
I mean, yeah, because in that game, he's got Alonso and Sissoko in central midfield.
Yeah.
And Gerrard's on the right. And obviously, Gerrard didn't like playing there.
Yeah.
And
well, he moved into the centre, didn't he?
Well, he would wander.
Midway through the second half.
Yeah, eventually. No,
but Alonso was taken off midway through the second half.
Yeah.
Did Kronkamp come on for him?
Kronkamp did come on.
And that allows Gerrard to go into the middle of midfield. So
it was a free role. Gerrard always wanted that free role.
But Benitez sort of, I think it's an acknowledgement of, actually, we need him in the middle now.
Yep.
Alonso wasn't injured, was he? Or
he might have been, but
I don't remember being an obvious injury. You wouldn't take Alonso off.
No.
Well, I think then you're playing with two deep lying midfielders, I suppose. You don't need to.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. It's a tactical decision to release Gerrard.
Sure.
The game has gone sort of completely against the way that Benitez would have been. He's probably even at 2-2, he's seething.
Yeah. Because
it's just complete anarchy in front of him and everything. And he's having to, they're playing a mid-table side who've got Brio Koker and Carl Fletcher in midfield, and he's just thinking, we're going to win this 2-0.
Yeah.
And, it's going to be one goal from a set piece, and then we'll score late on. And suddenly they're 2-0 down because they've let in two of the stupidest goals you could possibly. And he's having to let this guy there was always that sense that he didn't ever quite get Gerrard or wasn't totally. Mm-hmm. Would have let him go at some
point.
If
Gerrard didn't mean so much to the fans and the club, maybe he might have done.
Well, I mean, he very nearly did leave in 2005 to go to Chelsea.
Yeah.
But the sort of romantic in me, or the sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? The sort of...
philosopher.
Not even that word. The word that I'll come back to when I remember it in me. Maybe what you actually need in a great side is that combination. And it's that tension between the Dionysian Gerrard, you know, the anarchic force, the sort of the just the will to win and the cerebral controlling tactical brain of Benitez, and it's that tension between them which actually makes the great side.
Yeah, but then having said all this, at 2-2, 10 minutes later, West Ham are not done because Paul Konchesky crosses the ball and it loops over Reina. You'll say it's a shot, Jacob.
Oh, it's not. but I was behind that goal the lower tier, and so to the left of that goal, which is where the ball goes in. And he's just going down the, you know, it was a rare West Ham attack at that point because it looked like Liverpool were going to go on and win that game. And just Paul Konchesky, he had a good season coming in from Charlton, and he was a West Ham fan, and you know, a lot of people liked him, and it kind of went a bit wrong for him the following season. He played for England that year. He made his, I think it was his one and only England. I think probably Ashley Cole was injured or something, and he played in that game in Switzerland against Argentina.
Yeah,
do you remember that?
Yeah, it was there in Geneva,
So Paul Konchesky played in one of England's greatest ever wins, which is a baffling... Yeah. I think, I'm pretty sure he was at fault for one of the Argentina goals.
I think he was, but it was still a friendly match. But it was a great friendly.
But it wasn't really a friendly.
No.
Ledley King just not being able to deal with the Calame. Yeah. Which again, is just a phrase that sounds wrong in so many ways.
Hey, a win's a win's a win, though. Yeah. Good old England.
But that was, you know, he had done well that season and goes down and he whips in this cross that...
Clearly for Dean Ashton to get on.
No, but you can see from the angle behind him as he crosses it, you can see he just strikes it wrong. The ball basically just runs slightly too far.
And you know, again, you were looking at Reina a little bit. You know, it was...
He did have a good game, Reina. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those where Reina, I don't know how tall he is, but he's not massive for a keeper.
Yeah.
Keeper's disappointed, though, letting that...
Well, okay. By chance, I was in a doctor's surgery yesterday, and there was a very tall man next to me. And,
and it was Peter Crouch.
Well, he had a sign a thing to say that Ipswich Town would be paying his bills.
Oh.
And I then realised this very tall man was, in fact, the world's third tallest footballer, Tomáš Hulley, the Czech goalkeeper.
Right.
Now, Tomáš Hulley would not have let in that goal. He'd have very casually stretched... Well, wouldn't even have stretched up. Crouch. He'd have reached in front of his face and taken it.
Crouch wouldn't have let in, would he, as well?
Well, yeah, true.
But to be fair to Reina, he'd made a really brilliant save at 2-1 from Harewood. So, you know, West Ham had all these little moments throughout where they'd look back on it and think, well, if that had gone in or if that hadn't happened...
Yeah.
Then, if you know, if they'd gone 3-1 up at the start of the second half instead of it being 2-2, I know then they go 3-2 up.
Yeah, but they're the moments, aren't they, for West Ham fans and neutrals thinking, oh, if only. And then they get this enormous slice of luck.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, hang on a minute. It's massively back on. And of course, the minutes are then, the clock is counting
down. Liverpool, to be honest, there wasn't a barrage. I mean...
No.
If that had been probably that Chelsea side under Mourinho for a start, it wouldn't have been...
No. Well, if it was Ferguson's United,
it would have
been an onslaught.
For a start, West Ham wouldn't have gone 3-2 up against that Chelsea side. They wouldn't have gone 2-0 up. And they did go 1-0 up. They actually went 1-0 up against that Chelsea side a few weeks before. Chelsea then had a player sent off, Beniche. Do you remember? Chelsea's response to going down to 10 men and 1-0 down was to win 4-1. So that sort of told you what they might have done.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have let it get like that. And in that, if United had been in, say, 3-2 down in that final half an hour, it would have been a total barrage. But with Liverpool, it wasn't really there. Mm. It felt like the oxygen had sort of sucked out of them and everything. Mm-hmm. And the great irony about it all, and Gerrard's admitted this in his book, is that when that ball falls to him, 40 yards from goal, however far out it was. But the reason he was there was because he had cramp and he couldn't...
Well, he'd been struggling with cramp for sort of 5-6 minutes before that.
Yeah.
They had to have... Yeah, you know, he'd been on his back with teammates stretching his legs and, you know, he'd run himself into the ground.
Yeah, he was only there because of that. Well, and West Ham... There's a lot that goes into this goal because Scaloni is... This is what, you know, Collins the other day was saying, you know, they were sort of talking about it and... If only he'd just booted it clear, because they put the ball out, West Ham, for, I think maybe it was Cisse who'd gone down for Liverpool, down in the deep in the on the West Ham right. And they gave the ball back to Scaloni, Liverpool.
Amazingly
so. West Ham had put the ball out and Liverpool just probably more professional, more just, you know, streetwise in those moments. They didn't just let Scaloni let the ball run out for a goal kick. Carragher starts running towards him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember thinking of that at the time and thinking that was really, really poor sportsmanship to do that, because he should have just let it run out, because West Ham had the ball in and they put it out in quite a dangerous position. But what Scaloni at that point should have just, instead of putting it out in West Ham territory, should have just booted it up the pitch.
Yeah.
And he was an Argentina international. Well, he did quite naive.
I think he tried.
But eventually he booted it up the pitch.
Oh, you mean when he put the ball out? Sorry.
So both times. And then the second time, he probably should have just let it run out. And suddenly he got panicked by Carragher running towards him, and perhaps one other Liverpool player as well. He boots it straight out. There's still a lot that still has to happen. And one more attack. And they clear it, West Ham. And there's a sort of a half clearance that, if someone had got a proper contact on it, it would never have reached Gerrard. And
Scaloni's clearance comes to Gerrard, who plays it to Risa. Risa puts it in the box and it's headed away.
Yeah.
And it comes to Gerrard, who is probably about 40 yards out, takes a touch.
No, he doesn't.
No, he hits it first time.
Yeah. And it's, I think maybe Pardew has said this since then. Rio Coca had a brilliant game, especially in that last half an hour, because he was so fit. Rio Coca, it was probably one of the reasons that Gerrard had cramp. And Gerrard was one of the most powerful players going, wasn't he? And shows you probably how hard Rio Coca would have been running. And Rio Coca had because Gerrard had dropped off so deep, Rio Coca just wasn't marking him at that point. He was back in the West Ham area. Pardew had said, "Well, you know, we don't want you standing 40 yards away doing nothing. Standing, they can't go and man mark him from there." And so he drops off, but Gerrard suddenly has all this pace. And I remember it, just this shot seeming to pick up all this kind of pace as it's going in. I do slightly look at the goalkeeper at times and think it was so far out.
But he hits it so clean, he wouldn't be expecting it.
I mean, Shaka Hislop, who he was quite old at the time. He was coming towards the end of his career. And I always just thought he dives on it quite slowly. And perhaps, you know, West Ham bought Robert Green in the summer following that. And I always think, if that had been Green in goal, would that have gone in? You know, a guy in his 20s as opposed to a keeper in his late 30s whose career hadn't been the same since he'd broken his leg. But that was Gerrard at the time, though. It was just sort of this... The final was about West Ham. It was about West Ham. It was about West Ham until it wasn't, until it was just about one guy.
Yeah.
And just this force of character and desire to get Liverpool out of a hole.
Yeah, I mean,
very embarrassing for Liverpool if they'd lost that game.
Yeah, it would have been.
But I mean, for all that he wasn't closed down, you're in injury time.
Yep.
The opposition having shots from 40 yards.
That's all right.
Yeah. You're all right with that.
Yeah.
Chances are it's going out for goal kicking. It takes a bit of time, and
it had to take a moment of brilliance, and that's what they got.
The stadium announcer is going, there will be 4 minutes of just as it either reaching Gerrard or he's striking it. And then, you know, there'll be another 30 minutes of agony now because Gerrard's gone and done that.
And of course, they did manage to get it to penalties, West Ham.
They should have won as well. Because again, you kind of thought, here, this is done now. West Ham, they'd taken off Matty Etherington, who was their big outlet on the left, you know, quick left winger and everything. And I think they'd taken him off. Can't remember who for.
Sheringham.
And not quite the same pace with and Ashton had gone off as well for Zamora. They brought on Christian Daly in midfield, that was a last resort, really. They didn't have a very big squad. And you kind of thought, well, this is kind of done. And nothing much is going to happen now. Liverpool are going to win. And instead, what happened is the very best chance in extra time goes to West Ham. In the very, very last minute, they win a free kick. Benny Yoon, who probably was bought by Liverpool off the back of this game because he was absolutely brilliant that day, puts in a free kick, and Rio Coca sort of has this glancing header. And again, it's that end where I was at, and I can still see it in my mind, the ball going towards the goal, and Reina getting the lightest of fingertips on it, brushing it onto the inside of the post. And instead of it bouncing in, it bounces out. And it goes to Harewood, who had been basically kicked out the game by a terrible challenge from Sissoko. They'd used up all their subs, and these days you would get the extra sub in extra time. They couldn't take him off, and he's on one leg and it's 3 yards out, and he just puts this volley miles, completely, like, basically what we would do in that situation. it just looks like he isn't a footballer.
Yeah.
But behind him is Sheringham, If he'd left it, it's gutting, isn't it?
When you think about that,
but it goes to penalties. And just at that point, you know, well, Liverpool are going to win on penalties. Yeah. There's no, they Liverpool always win on penalties. Don't they?
And they did sort of fairly handedly 3-1.
Yeah. Well, I think I remember the guy next to me said, as Gerrard's walking up, going, right, if he misses this, we will win. And Gerrard just like smacks it to a corner.
Well, Sheringham was the only one who scored for West Ham.
Yeah, the only experienced player who took one. The others were Anton, Konchesky missed one,
Zamora missed one.
Zamora was a very good save. The others were. Rayner was. That was the one thing about Rayner was that he was the penalty specialist.
He was. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. This was a save from Zamora low to his right.
Yeah.
He was a very good save.
I think Anton hits the bar, I think. It's a very poor penalty.
It's a low to the right, but no, in the corner. And Konchesky's is straight down the middle.
Yeah.
And Rayner's dived just left and sort of sticks his foot up and blocks it. And Hippier missed for Liverpool, or was saved by his luck. But.
Yeah.
And Liverpool won the cup. And it's a shame because when you look at those, all the cup wins in sort of the last sort of 20 odd years, barring, what would it be, Portsmouth, but they weren't playing a big side in the final, Portsmouth. Fair enough, obviously they won it. But barring sort of Portsmouth and Wigan, off the top of my head, unless I'm missing somebody, it's all the big clubs, isn't it, really? And that was such an opportunity, or in such a near miss for one of the sort of, I suppose, so-called one, not one of the elite clubs to. Yeah.
Would remember that trophy. For
Exactly.
Rather than just being another trophy, but not really what we're going for this season.
And they've not been to one since then.
Yeah,
and they've had a couple of close runs of. Not really, though. They got to the quarterfinal in 2016, quarterfinal in 2011. Beyond that, nothing really. It's been pretty mediocre in the cup competitions. They did get to it. They got to a semi-final in the League Cup in 2014 and lost 9-0 on aggregate to Manchester City. So there was that. But it was one of those rare cup finals over the last few years where the underdogs actually, it needs an underdog to turn up.
It does.
Last season, Watford 6-0. Against City, go to 2015. Villa lost 4-0 to Arsenal.
Hull would probably be the last one.
You know, otherwise it's going to be a game between those sides. It can be quite
indeed
forgettable. That was the last last hurrah for that. West. And it was also Benitez's last trophy.
Yeah, but the trophy that still eludes Pardew as a manager.
Yes.
it's not the only trophy. It's not Brian Clough.
He did lift silverware at Cardiff the year before. You do get a trophy for winning the playoffs.
You do indeed. Well, Jacob, it's been a pleasure talking to you about this game. I mean, it's consolation, of course, but West Ham, they played their part in a very, very good FA Cup final.
Yeah, and Pards was out of a job 3 months later.
God, dear.
Yeah.
They were the days.
He did get to manage Tevez and Mascherano.
He did indeed. My goodness. Well, we've come to the end of our time. Jacob, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jonathan, a pleasure as always.
Cheers, thank you.
Thanks for listening to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. Do go to blizzard.co.uk to find out more about stories like this. See you next week.
It's Ferdinand, saved again by Rayner, and Liverpool have won the FA Cup.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.